desk. The dark circles under his eyes and lines of worry across his brow made him look as if he had aged years in the course of a month.
"What do you need, Matilda? I've no time for social calls today."
I hesitated. What could Mr. Brown do? I couldn't work a press. He couldn't bring Grandfather back from the grave. "Please, sir," I said. "I would like to place an advertisement in your newspaper. I'm searching for my mother. She's gone." Mr. Brown pulled a stained kerchief out of his trouser pocket and rubbed it over his face and neck.
"Matilda, there is nothing I'd rather do than run an advertisement for your mother. But look about you."
He spread his arms to take in the shop.
"There is hardly any paper to be had for 100 miles. The Gazette is the last paper being printed in the city, and I have to print on half sheets. 5 other newspapers have closed down. I wish I could flee myself."
He paused and looked out the window. I thought he had forgotten me.
"But I must stay. This paper is the only method of communication left in the city. I must print physicians' notices, orders from the mayor."
His face dropped to his hands. The shop was perfectly quiet, save for the sound of the clock ticking on the wall and a fly caught in a spider's web strung across a grimy window pane. "Mr. Brown? Sir?" He took a deep breath and looked up.
"In the beginning of August, this was the largest city in the United States. 40,000 people lived here. Near as I can tell..."
He pointed to the jumble of notes and letters on the desk before him.
"More than half the city has fled. 20,000 people.
"How many dead, sir?"
"More than 3,000. Enough to fill house after house, street after street."
"I went to the market but found no food," I said.
"Few farmers dare come into town. They charge exorbitant prices for their wares and get whatever they ask,"
he said bitterly.
"Those who don't die of the fever are beginning to starve. You've seen the rats?"
I nodded.
"The rats thrive. I should write that."
He dipped a quill into the ink pot and scribbled a note.
"The only creatures to benefit from this pestilence are the rats. Go home, Matilda. Take my regards to your grandfather, but tell him he must lock all the doors and pray for frost."
I started to tell him what had happened, but a young man burst through the door waving a letter and shouting. Mr. Brown shooed me from his shop with a wave of his hand. No matter. Telling him wouldn't bring Grandfather back, and it was clear he couldn't help me. I turned the corner and found myself in front of Warner's hat shop. Mrs. Warner knew my mother a bit. Perhaps they would let me stay a day or two, or share some bread. But the hattery was locked up tight. I couldn't even peek inside through the shutters. No sign of the Warner family.
"Hey there, you! Girlie, by the hatters!"
A sharp-eyed woman holding a cloth over her face crossed the street. She was older than Mother, with white wisps of hair escaping a dirty mob cap. Her dress was faded. Her eyes narrowed, watching me with suspicion. She stopped a few paces away from me, her cane slightly raised.
"What business do you have here? Off with you!" the woman shouted.
"I mean no harm," I explained. My nose wrinkled at the smell of vinegar coming from the woman. "Do you know where the Warners are?" The woman stepped backward.
"What is your business here?" she demanded.
"I'm looking for a friend." The woman considered me for a moment.
"They left for Chester in the dark of night. Warner has kin there. There was horrible screaming and carrying on. The youngest girl fell ill after an apprentice died."
She spat the word like a wormy seed.
"They threw out the body on the way. And you, do you carry this evil blot on your soul as well?"
"I fell ill, but recovered in the Bush Hill Hospital."
"Get back! Stay away from me!"
the woman shrieked as she raised her cane higher.
Leave before I call my man! No fever victims here!
She brought the cane down across my back. The blow sent me face first into the dirt.
Leave!
The woman screamed. I fought my way to my feet before the cane crashed downward again. I ran blindly, ignoring the pain in my throat and the ache in my side. The sun blazed overhead. I lost my way. The cut on my foot started to bleed again. I walked and walked, trying not to remember or feel. I wandered up one street and down the next. The printer's words haunted me. Thousands dead. I saw grandfather's empty eyes. No food. I saw mother order me to leave her. No hope. I passed people weeping in doorways and did not stop. I heard the death carts rattling in the street and did not look up. A breeze picked up, pushing me eastward, toward the docks, east toward the water, away from the sun. I could see the tops of ships' masts peeking over the rooftops like trees in the dead of winter. The sodden wharf planks moaned as the tide pulled the river water toward the open sea. My mind floated with dark thoughts. What did it feel like to die? Was it a peaceful sleep? Some thought it was full of either trumpet-blowing angels or angry devils. Perhaps I was already dead. I shook my head. Nonsense! Foolish nonsense! I was being weak and foolish. There was no point in wandering like a lost puppy. I needed to get home and sleep. Grandfather would not be proud if he saw me acting so spineless. I needed to captain myself. My foot scuffed something. I looked down to keep from tripping. A china-faced doll wearing a satin dress lay by the curb, her head shattered, her dress coated with dirt. A few steps away, an abandoned satchel, still packed with clean shirts, lay open. I picked up the broken doll and heard a whimpering sound coming from an open doorway. I put my head through the door and waited for my eyes to adjust to the gloom. A small child cowered in the corner, her blonde hair loose and tangled. Her feet bare and black with dirt. She was sucking her thumb and keening to herself. I held out the doll to her. "Is this yours?" I said.
"Broken,"
she said. "Is your mama here? Or your papa? Perhaps they can fix it." The little girl whispered something. I stepped closer to hear her.
"Mama's broken, too,"
she said. Chapter 21. September 27th, 1793. At other places we found a parent dead, and none but little innocent babes to be seen, whose ignorance led them to think their parent was asleep. Richard Allen and Absalom Jones. A narrative of the proceedings of the black people during the late awful calamity in Philadelphia in the year 1793. Her mother was dead, broken, in the eyes of Tiny Nell. Her name was the last bit of information I could get from her. Seeing her mother's body, quite clearly a victim of yellow fever, on the bed seemed to make her mute. She stood before me. And before I realized what I had done, I picked her up and cradled her close. Now what? I couldn't care for Nell. I could barely care for myself. And her mother needed burying. Though I didn't relish another trip back to the public square, I had to find someone to care for her. None of the neighbors who answered their doors knew anything about the family. And they all had enough problems of their own without taking in the child.
"You might try Reverend Allen's group," offered one woman. "I seen two women carrying a basket down the alley not long ago. They'll know what to do with the child, and they'll send one to care for the mother."
"Where do I find them?" I asked. If you can't find any of their members hereabouts, go down Fifth Street, south of Walnut. They hold meetings there, where they're building a church. You'll find someone there to help, I'll wager.
Fifth Street, south of Walnut. So many blocks to walk, and I'd have to do it with Nell on my hip. But it would be farther to carry her to the orphan house, and farther still to the coffee house. Nell looked at me. There was no choice. I hoisted her high in my arms and started south. I kept my eyes open for anyone who might help, but the only folks in the street were sailors, and most of them were drunk. I was nearing the dockside taverns. I held Nell close and tried to walk faster. I did not want to delay in this part of town. Two black women ahead of me caught the attention of a rowdy group hanging outside a tavern door. They moved swiftly, ignoring the taunts and vicious words the men called after them. I blinked. I rubbed my eyes. There was something about the straight line of the taller woman's back, the color of the cap on her dark head. "Eliza?" I whispered. I blinked again. The sunlight on the water had left spots dancing in front of my eyes. The women walked steadily away from me, each holding a large basket over their arms. "Eliza?" They turned into an alleyway and disappeared. "Eliza!" I screamed. My feet found their strength, and I took off at a full run, Nell bouncing painfully and gripping my shift for her life. "Eliza!" A filthy man from the group in front of the tavern broke off from his friends and chased after me. "Hello, love," he slurred. His breath carried the stench of dockside garbage, whiskey and filth, hardtack and disease. "Come and dance with me." He tried to pluck Nell from my arms. "Come dance," he insisted. Nell wound her legs tightly around my waist and bit the man's hand. He howled with outrage while his companions collapsed in laughter. I held tightly to Nell and sprinted for the alley, afraid to look over my shoulder. "Glad you're on my side," I told Nell. She stuck her thumb back in her mouth as if nothing had happened. The women were gone. I walked down the alley to a courtyard. It should have been crowded with playing children, chickens, and pigs, but was quiet, save for the noises made by a tired woman hanging out laundry. I checked behind me. The drunk had found other sport and had not followed us. Nell was growing heavier by the minute. I carried her over to the woman hanging out her wash. "Please, excuse me, ma'am. Have you seen two women with baskets walk by here?"
"I seen nobody," the woman answered. "Do you have the fever?"
"No, I'm well."
"You don't look well," the woman said. "You look like a wraith."
"The women, did you see them? They must have passed by. It is most important that I find them."
"Try the Simon House. I heard the door close that way a moment ago."
"Which one is the Simon House?"
The woman pointed at a house that fronted onto the courtyard, then drew a stained coverlet from the tub at her feet. I paused in front of the yellow rag tacked to the door. Should I bring Nell in a house with fever victims? She blinked sea-green eyes at me. "What a foolish question. This child has lived in a fever house for days. Weeks, maybe." I opened the door and rushed in. The parlor stood ready for company, with surprisingly fine furniture for the neighborhood and a portrait on the wall. Thick dust coated the chairs and table, and a man's coat lay on the floor. I stood, unsure of what to do next, when I heard the murmur of voices and footsteps overhead. I gathered up my skirts and went up.
"Eliza?"
A young man leaned over his wife, fanning her face with a paper fan. Two silent children sat on the floor, gnawing hard rolls.
"Are you come from the apothecary?"
the man asked in a rasping voice. I shook my head.
"They promised to send Peruvian bark. It may save her yet."
He shifted the fan to his other hand.
Why, then, have you come?
I'm looking for Eliza. I was told she was here.
We have no Eliza here,
he answered. I looked at the children again. Did two women just come to deliver those rolls? The man nodded.
Saints. Angels. They're from the Free African Society. God bless them. If one is the Eliza you seek, you might find her yet. They had several other homes to visit.
I ran back to the street. Where could she be? I couldn't try each door or go in every house. What if she left one house as I entered another? There was only one solution. I set Nell on the ground and cupped my hands around my mouth. Eliza! I waited until the echo faded among the sounds of the seagulls high overhead and tried again. Eliza! Who calls there? The faint voice came from an open window. Eliza? It's me, Maddie! I scanned the windows around the courtyard but could not find the face I was looking for. A door closed. There! Eliza had just reached the bottom step when I slammed into her. She wrapped her arms around me. Maddie, 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 she cooed. What on earth are you doing here? And where did you find that baby girl?
Chapter 22 September 27th, 1793. Yesterday was the worst day yet. Even those who are not sick have eyes tinged with yellow. More doctors are ill and dying. Dr. Benjamin Rush, Letter, 1793.
It all hit me at once. My fears about Mother, the fever, Bush Hill, watching Grandfather die, being scared, alone, and hungry. I cried. I cried a river, and poor Eliza did her best to comfort me. The kinder her words, the harder I cried. When I finally paused to catch my breath, she had one question. Why aren't you with your mother at the farm? What do you mean? I asked. Mother didn't come to the farm with us. We never got there.
Oh, dear, said Eliza.
She looked around at the deepening shadows.
We can't stay here. You are coming with me to my brother's. You can tell me what happened as we walk.
Eliza pulled her companion aside and spoke quietly. The woman looked at me with an arched eyebrow and walked away. Am I taking you away from your work? I asked. Do you need to help your friend?
It's time for all of us to be safe at home, said Eliza.
She pulled a roll from her basket.
Is this little one hungry?
Nell snatched the roll without a word and took a huge bite.
That's a good answer, said Eliza.
She laid her hand on Nell's forehead and neck. I don't think she has the fever, I said. I hesitated. I didn't want Nell to hear me discuss her mother. She's alone. Eliza nodded.
We have to hurry, she said. Do you want me to carry her?
Nell tensed and locked her arms around my neck. I would have gratefully delivered her to Eliza, but I didn't think my neck would survive. I'm fine, I lied. Eliza led me down back streets as I briefly explained what had happened since Grandfather and I left the coffee house. I skipped the hardest parts, being alone with Grandfather's body, lying in Bush Hill, the robbers. I didn't want to cry in front of Nell. Eliza didn't say anything, just shook her head and hurried me along until we reached the narrow street where she lived. Her brother, Joseph, was a cooper. He made barrels, a good trade. Eliza lived with Joseph's family in a small apartment above the cooperage. I stopped at the bottom of the stairs. I had to know. I covered Nell's ears.
Where's Mother? She's dead, isn't she? She's dead, and you're trying to shield me from it.
Eliza put a hand on her back and stretched.
No, no,
She's not dead. Don't think that for a minute. Last I saw her, she was recovered from the fever and bent on following you to the farm.
The knot at the base of my neck loosened. I must go there, then. I have to find her, Eliza.
Hush. You can only climb one mountain at a time. Come upstairs and eat some dinner. We'll think better with full bellies. I promise I'll tell you all I know. She led me up the stairs to a small set of rooms, dimly lit but clean-smelling and orderly.
Joseph's wife died last week, Eliza whispered as we paused in the doorway.
He mourns her something terrible. He is still in bed, recovering. He's weak, but he'll survive. Thank the Lord, the boys haven't taken ill.
Plump-cheeked twins stormed Eliza as soon as she crossed the threshold.
These are the boys. She hugged them tightly before disentangling herself from four arms.
We have company, she said.
This is Maddie, my friend from the coffee house, and Maddie's little friend, Nell.
Maddie, this is Robert, and this is William. The boys peered shyly at me, then hid their faces in Eliza's skirts.
Nell mimicked them, hiding her face in my neck.
If I didn't set her down soon, my arms were going to snap off at the shoulder.
Is that you, Eliza?
A tiny woman leaning on a cane slowly made her way into the room. Snow-colored hair framed a deeply lined face the color of aged mahogany. She looked to be the oldest person I had ever seen. The woman walked straight to me and poked my arm.
"Who's this?"
she demanded. As Eliza explained, the old woman harumphed and snorted.
"So you've got to feed them, too?" she asked.
"No, ma'am. Eliza doesn't have to feed me," I protested, although that's exactly what I was hoping Eliza would do. "We came across each other in the course of our errands. I'll need to go home soon. And Nell..." I wasn't sure how to end that sentence. The old woman shook her head.
"You don't leave until you've eaten. I've seen brooms with more meat on them. The stew is hot, Eliza, and you still have bread and turnips. I'll come again in the morning."
She turned in the doorway and pointed a finger twisted with work and age at the boys.
"No trouble from you two. Let your papa sleep and mind Eliza, or I'll send a ghost after you."
The boys stared with wide eyes and nodded. The old woman chuckled as she walked out, her cane heavy on the floor.
"I'll stop by tomorrow. We'll see if the wagon from Lititz comes on time. Never thought the day would come when I wished I worked a farm again."
Her voice faded as she made her way down to the street, one slow step at a time. The boys stared at the closed door.
"That was Mother Smith," Eliza told me. "Don't worry, children. She won't send any ghosts. Who wants to help me with Papa's supper?"
The stew in the kettle was made for four, not six. Eliza ladled out a full portion into my bowl, but I poured half of it back.
"I don't need all of this, Eliza. The boys should eat so they don't take sick."
Eliza looked at me closely.
She said. "Could be you're right."
She took a bowl of soup into her brother Joseph and left me at the table with the children. Nell let me unwind her from my neck when she realized a bowl of soup was for her. She sat on my lap and stared at Robert and William. They slurped up their soup and stared back. I thought they might be close to the same age. A plan began forming in my mind, but I quickly shushed the thought. I didn't have time to dream or plan. I would deal with each hour as it came, one step at a time. The bustle of the family's evening, clearing away, washing up, getting the boys ready for bed, pushed away all thoughts of the fever for a few hours. Nell fell asleep in my lap shortly after dinner and didn't wake when I laid her on a soft quilt that Eliza spread on the floor. When the boys were finally asleep and Joseph was resting comfortably, Eliza set two chairs by an open window, handed me a mug of lemonade, and motioned for me to sit down.
Matilda Cook, it is time for the truth. You stay right there on that chair until you tell me what happened. Everything.
I never could keep anything from Eliza. The story slid out with all the details. Being abandoned on the road, struggling to care for Grandfather, getting the fever, the garden, the intruders, Grandfather's death. Talking about him brought back the tears.
I did everything wrong, Eliza. I couldn't make a decent meal for Grandfather. I knew he wasn't well. His face was so red. I should have done something, chased the intruders out. Or better yet, not been such a baby and left the shutters open just because I was hot. It is all my fault.
Eliza handed me a clean handkerchief and patted my hand until my sobs quieted.
Your grandfather was a wise man. You couldn't have saved him, Maddie. It was his time.
I sniffed and took a shaky breath.
What happened after he died? She asked.
I filled in the rest of the story quickly. This strange day that began with a burial and ended with a homeless child in my arms. Eliza watched Nell sleeping. She lay curled on her side, clutching her headless doll.
You understand that she needs to go to the orphan house, don't you? You should probably go there yourself.
My stomach tightened. Please, Eliza, don't make me go. I know you think I'm a child, bigger than Nell, but a baby, still, and that I need someone to tell me to wash my face and finish my bread.
I struggled to control my voice.
I'm not a little girl. I can take care of myself.
We'll talk about it in the morning. We'll talk about everything in the morning.
Eliza rubbed her shoulders and stretched her neck. Do you feel ill? Do you want to lie down? I asked.
I'm just tired, and I can't sleep yet. A woman's work is never done. Isn't that what the fools say? Here.
She pulled a small pair of pants out of a basket at her feet and rummaged for a needle and spool of dark thread.
Robert and William are harder on their clothes than any dock worker I've ever seen. Stitch up the rips while I try to put this shirt back together. I'll tell you what I've been doing.
I bit off a length of thread and slid it through the eye of a needle as Eliza talked.
A few weeks ago, Dr. Benjamin Rush wrote to Reverend Allen asking for help.
Reverend Allen from the Free African Society?
The same. The doctors thought us Africans couldn't get yellow fever. Reverend Allen said this was a chance for black people to show we are every bit as good and important and useful as white people. The society organized folks to visit the sick, to care for them and bury them if they died.
Eliza's voice drifted off as she caught a memory. She took a deep breath and picked her sewing up again. Is that why you were visiting those homes this morning?
Eliza nodded. Yes. Mother Smith takes my place minding the boys and Joseph. The society has done a remarkable job, and I don't mind saying that with pride. The Africans of Philadelphia have cared for thousands of people without taking notice of color. If only the doctors had been right, we could look to these days of suffering as days of hope.
I stuck the needle in my thumb. What do you mean, if only the doctors had been right?
Eliza held the shirt up to the light to check the evenness of the stitches. After a few weeks of nursing the sick and burying the dead, our own people started to sicken. Black people can get sick with yellow fever, just like white people or Indians. I do know some who have never been sick, but there are white people who can say the same thing.
We stitched in silence, each deep in thought. Are we going to die, Eliza? I asked finally.
Eliza snorted. That's foolish talk. I'm not going to die. I have too much work to do. Mother Smith there, she won't go until she's ready, and the Lord himself asks for the pleasure of her company. Don't listen to words of despair, Maddie. You must be strong and have faith.
When will it end?
For everything there is a season, remember? When the frost comes, the fever will vanish. We just have to find a way to make it until then. Chapter 23. September 28th, 1793. There is great distress in the city for want of cash. Friendship is nearly entirely banished from our city. Dr. Benjamin Rush, Letter, 1793. Small children can give off powerful smells, particularly small children who don't know how to wake at night and use the chamber pot. When I woke on the quilt next to Nell, I smelled her, then realized she was soaking wet. I was merely damp. Eliza shook her head and chuckled. Babies are the same, no matter what the color. You might as well wash the twins' bedding. They have a similar problem. There wasn't room in the small apartment to wash, so I scrubbed the quilt and blankets in the courtyard behind the cooperage. Robert, William, and Nell sat on a log and watched me, solemn as three old preachers. By the time the blankets were drying and I had washed the three smelly children, Eliza had gone out to care for the sick, and Mother Smith had taken control. Mother Smith tapped her way around the room with her cane, circling me like a hawk. She made me rewash the breakfast dishes with near-boiling water and complained that I left too much dirt behind when I swept. She snorted when she saw my stitching. She cackled out loud when I tried to comb the knots out of Nell's hair. Too bad my mother never met Mother Smith, I thought as I beat a rug for the third time in the courtyard. They would have gotten along famously, complaining about me and out-scrubbing each other. She did know how to tell a story. I had to give her that. She sat in Eliza's rocker with the children at her feet and told a tale of magic buckets and flying ships. The children were enchanted. I applied all my force to clean the burned bits from the bottom of the stew pot. Mother Smith hadn't said a word when the stew burned because I forgot to stir it. She didn't have to say a word. The way she lifted her chin as she turned away said everything. I was a complete failure. When the story was over, the boys trundled off to bed without protest. Nell climbed in my lap and fell asleep, sucking her thumb. I worked the knots out of her hair slowly and gently. My stomach rumbled underneath her. I had skipped supper. I figured my portion had been the one which stuck to the bottom of the pot. Mother Smith pulled her shawl on and prepared to leave. "Do you think Eliza is all right?" I asked. "Shouldn't she have come home before dark?"
"The pain doesn't go away at sundown," Mother Smith said. "Eliza will stay where she's needed."
Nell stirred, and I patted her back.
"Don't love her," warned Mother Smith.
"Pardon me?"
"I said, don't you fall in love with that baby girl. She's not yours. You can't keep her. You had any sense, you'd take her right down to the orphan house tomorrow and hand her over. Don't look back."
"That would be cruel," I said. "She needs some time to get over the shock of, you know," I mouthed the words, "her mother." "Then I'll take her." Mother Smith shook her head.
"You're not doing her any favors. Fact is, you're making it harder on her. She stays with you. You feed her, wash her, sing to her, mother her, then give her away. How's that going to make her feel? You're the cruel one."
Her words dogged me through the night. At first I tried to ignore them. What did Mother Smith know about Nell or me? We were strangers to her. Nell needed someone to hold her. No one at the orphan house would do that. They'd sit her in the corner and scold her. But Mother Smith was right. I was being selfish, holding Nell close, showing her how to play catch with the twins. I needed her more than she needed me. How long would Eliza keep me? A day, maybe? A week, if I were lucky? She had her own family to worry about. I needed to do right by Nell and go back to my own home. I had my feet under me now. I knew how to walk. One good thing about not being able to sleep was that I remembered to wake Nell and have her do her business in the chamber pot. I was just tucking her in long after midnight when Eliza came home. She was too weary to speak. I rose early and kept the children quiet by serving them breakfast outside. I didn't care if anyone thought it improper. Philadelphia was long past worrying about where children ate their bread, and Eliza needed to sleep. She joined us outside with a cup of tea when she finally woke. "I don't know when I last slept so much," she said. "Thank you for taking care of the children." She bent over to give Robert and William a kiss. "You seem to have the day well in hand, Miss Mattie." She stopped. Nell was tugging at Eliza's dress. "What do you want, honeybee?" Nell pointed to her forehead. "She wants you to kiss her, like you did the boys," I said. Eliza's laughter sounded clean and strong. She swooped Nell off the ground and gave her a big hug and kiss on the cheek before setting her on the ground to play with the boys. The three of them were chasing a raggy-tailed rooster around the courtyard. I scuffed a pebble across the street. "That rooster should be in a pen," I said. "He might hurt the children."
"Nonsense," said Eliza.
"He won't hurt anything. Why is your face so long?" I scuffed another pebble. "I need to take Nell to the orphan house. The more I put it off, the harder it will be."
Eliza sat on the stoop.
"Mother Smith has been talking to you."
I nodded. "She's right. I know she's right. But it's so hard to think about next week or next month. Look at her. She is happy today. I'm happy today. I don't think we're a burden, are we?"
Eliza shook her head.
But
I can't just think about today. I have to think ahead. Even if Mother is alive, she won't want another girl child to raise up. She's only just finished with me, and heaven knows that was hard enough. And what if Mother isn't alive?
I raised my hand as Eliza started to speak.
"You know it's possible. I've tried to avoid thinking about it, but I can't. In any event, Nell needs to go. I don't want to, but it would be better for her."
The rooster hopped into the air, flapping his wings and sending feathers everywhere. The children shrieked and ran in circles. Eliza stood up.
"If you've made up your mind, then we should leave right now. No telling what the future will bring. I'll get my hat. The boys can stay here with Joseph."
I felt like a turncoat, a traitor. Nell walked between us for a few blocks, then asked me to carry her. She wasn't over losing her mother. That would take a long time, but she seemed content enough to be with me. I knew Eliza's eyes were on me, but she kept her thoughts to herself. I tried to force my thoughts away from the heartbreak. It was impossible. We walked past blocks of empty houses, along streets that felt abandoned. "I am not abandoning Nell," I told myself sternly. "I'm doing the right thing, no matter how much it hurts." The orphan house appeared much too soon. It looked forbidding, though I knew that was nonsense. It was just a house, a building for unfortunate children. "You are doing the right thing," I told myself. "It's best for Nell. It's best for Nell."
The woman who answered the door held one screaming infant in her arms and had two crying toddlers grabbing at her skirts. I had to shout to make myself heard above the noise. She bounced up and down, trying to quiet the child in her arms while patting the heads of the others. She looked like a carved whirligig toy, with six flying arms and a hopping head.
"I've brought this girl," I began. My throat closed and tears welled up in my eyes. "Don't be such a ninny," I scolded myself.
"Not another one!" The woman's eyes widened.
"Shush, shush! I can't pick you all up at the same time," she said to the crying children, who all needed to blow their noses.
She looked at me with desperate eyes.
"I'm sorry. That was rude."
She shifted the baby to her other shoulder.
"Is that the girl?"
She motioned toward Nell with her elbow.
I nodded. I still couldn't speak. "A fever orphan?"
One more nod.
"Is there no one who could take her? This house is just bursting with children right now. Mrs. Bowles, she's in charge here. She's meeting with the mayor's committee right now, explaining how we need more space and more money to feed the little ones."
One of the children at her feet pushed the other, who exploded into howls. The woman raised her voice to be heard.
"I told her the mayor's committee should hold its meeting here. Then they'd give us what we need."
She bent down and tried to calm the injured child with her free hand.
I cleared my throat. "You don't have room for more children?" "This is better than the street," she answered. "But we are very crowded right now. That's the truth. We can't send letters to relatives who might want to help because the mail isn't being delivered."
She bent down and picked up the toddler who was crying the loudest. She had to raise her voice to be heard over the racket.
"If you know of anyone who will care for her, then you should take her there. This has become the house of last resort."
Nell looked up at me, her eyes as clear as the sky. She trusted me to do what was right for her. I felt the grip on my heart relax. I looked to Eliza.
"Seems she's better off with you,"
Eliza noted.
I wanted to dance. "Thank you," I told the harried woman. "Thank you, thank you. Good luck. I mean, best wishes. Goodbye."
I dashed down the steps before she could change her mind. Eliza struggled to catch up with me.
"Slow down, slow down. You'll wear yourself out walking that fast in the heat."
I waited for her at the corner.
"I did the right thing, didn't I? You saw how crowded it is in there. They would never comb her hair or tell her stories. She's better off with me, isn't she?"
Eliza stood with her hands on her hips.
"We are all better off together. That's what I think. Let's turn here. The street is shaded."
"The Ogilvies live down here," I said. "Do you think they are still in town?"
"I heard a few stories about them, but I don't know if they're true," Eliza said.
Tell me," I begged. "I have to know."
"Wait, is it sad?" "I don't want to know if it's sad." We stopped in front of the Ogilvy mansion. It was shuttered, like the other houses on the street. It seemed like years since Mother and I stood at the front door, waiting for the disastrous tea. I turned Nell loose to pick marigolds from the garden.
"It's a little of both, happy and sad," Eliza said.
I moved Nell away from a rosebush.
"Tell me, then. I'll only think about the happy parts."
Eliza joined us by the flower beds. The shade felt like silk on my skin. Bees hummed lazily in the distance, and swallows swooped overhead. This was how summer was supposed to feel. I could drink it in all day.
"I don't know if this is true, mind, but I heard this story in the market just a few days after you'd left with your grandfather. The oldest Ogilvy girl, the one who got sick?"
"Colette. Did she die?"
"Worse."
"What could be worse than dying?" You wouldn't think it was worse, but her mama sure did. Miss Colette came down with an awful case of the fever. You know how they are. They call in this doctor and that doctor, spend money, fuss, and holler. Nothing helps. The girl is burning up. The whole family gathers at her bedside, thinking she's going to Jesus, when she sits up straight in bed and starts screaming for, "Louis! Louis!" Turns out this Louis is her husband. But wasn't she engaged to Roger Garthing? Mm-hmm. And listen, this Louis was her French tutor. They had eloped just before she got sick. So everyone starts to scream and carry on. The younger daughter has a temper tantrum, 'cause it turns out she was sweet on this Frenchie too. The mother faints, and their little dog bites the doctor. One is not supposed to laugh at other people's misfortunes, but I could picture the scene in my mind so perfectly, it caused me to laugh until my sides hurt. Oh, gracious! I shouldn't. Please tell me no one died. Eliza laughed. No, they're all alive and making each other miserable. Too spiteful to die, if you ask me. They moved into some relative's house in Delaware. Poor things. The relatives, I mean. And Louis, the son-in-law, is with them. I heard Miss Colette sat herself in the middle of the street and refused to budge until her mother agreed that he could come with them. Now, stir your bones. That's enough storytelling and idling for one day. She peered down the street. Let's go home. We decided to stay on the cool street as long as we could. Nell skipped between us, seemingly free of worries and concerns. I was going through all the families I knew, trying to think of someone who might want to take in an adorable imp. Trouble was, I had no way of knowing which families still had parents. Nell stooped to pick up a daisy on the sidewalk. She held it up to me with a smile, and I tucked it into her hair. We took another step, and she found another daisy, laying on the ground, not growing there. As I stood, puzzling, three daisies floated through the air. Nell put her hands up to catch them and spun around, laughing. Eliza, we've had strange weather this summer, but I've never known daisies to fall from the sky. We looked up. The houses around us had their shutters closed. Wait. Look there! I pointed to a second-story window. The shutters were open a crack, and an unseen hand was pushing out daisies, one by one. Well, I never, began Eliza. Do you think they need help? I asked. They have the strangest way of showing it, answered Eliza. She went up to the front door and knocked. No one came to the door, though we could both hear people moving within and talking. I guess they don't want company. Might as well be on our way. Wait! I looked up and down the street to get my bearings. This is the painter's house, Mr. Peel. You know, the one who gave all those strange names to his poor children. Rubens, Raphael, Rembrandt, and I don't know what other nonsense. A daisy fluttered to my feet. Eliza's eyes widened. That boy is apprenticed here, isn't he? She asked. She knew full well the answer. I looked up at the window. The shutter opened a bit wider, and a handful of flowers drifted down. Something fell and crashed inside the house. Then the shutter closed quickly. We should leave, advised Eliza. He has a knack for getting in trouble. I slowly helped Nell gather the flowers. I thought I saw a shadow move behind an unshuttered downstairs curtain. A tall, lean shadow. My heart tripped over the thought of Nathaniel Benson, and I smiled in spite of myself. He was alive, and still sending me flowers. If I hadn't been carrying Nell, I think I could have skipped all the way back to Eliza's.
There was no more talk of returning me to the coffee house or finding a different home for Nell. Joseph and Eliza agreed that I couldn't live alone, not with the deserted streets as dangerous as the crowded sick rooms. We didn't talk about what would happen after the fever. Eliza promised we would find my mother or learn her fate as soon as the epidemic was over. We didn't talk about Nell. We just loved her. 2 days later, Mother Smith sent word that she had to help a family of 8 that had just lost their mother. 8? She's going to take care of 8 children? I was stunned.
If Mother Smith put her mind to it, she could take care of 50. I've no doubt about that at all,
answered Joseph. He was sitting up to the table and making quick work of the fried eggs and cornbread Eliza set before him. His strength was returning, along with his appetite. I took the bread from my plate and broke it into 3 pieces, which I handed to the twins and Nell. Every day, more towns prohibited travel to or from Philadelphia. Even prices higher than any in memory couldn't tempt farmers into the city with fresh food. I tried not to eat more than I absolutely had to. I tightened the drawstring of my skirts a bit more every morning.
I was going to send the old lady home today if she had turned up,
Joseph continued. Robert climbed into his lap.
I'm strong enough to make my way around the house. Mother Smith doesn't have to worry about us no more.
Do you want Maddie to stay with you? Eliza asked as she wiped off William's sticky fingers and held out the rag to her brother. Nell held up her hands for me to clean. I brushed them off on my skirt and stood up to clear away the dishes.
There's little enough business right now,
Joseph said as he took the rag to wipe jam off Robert's face.
I think I can control this terrible trio for a bit. Folks out there need all the help they can get, even if it does come from a skinny white girl.
I swallowed hard. Was I really that useless? Joseph laughed at the expression on my face.
I'm teasing. You worry too much, Maddie. You're a great help.
It was nice to hear him say that. Robert squirmed away from the rag, but his father caught him and cleaned off most of the mess before he set his son on the floor. Robert raced William into the bedchamber. Nell toddled behind them. Eliza dusted the crumbs from the table into her hand.
If you don't need her here, then yes, she can be of great help. We need every strong back we can get. She can come with me.
Chapter 24. October 1st, 1793. We set out to see where we could be useful. The black people were looked to. We then offered our services in the public papers by advertising that we would remove the dead and procure nurses. Richard Allen and Absalom Jones. A narrative of the proceedings of the black people during the late awful calamity in Philadelphia, in the year 1793. The sights and smells of Eliza's patients were no worse than Bush Hill, but I was not prepared for the heartache. Walking into the homes of strangers, sitting on their furniture, and drying the tears of their children was harder than cleaning up the sick. A dying woman in a cot surrounded by strangers was sorrowful, but a dying woman surrounded by her children, her handiwork, the home where she worked so hard, left me in tears. We left the house at first light and sometimes did not return until dark. Joseph kept the children busy in his shop and had supper ready for us when we stumbled home. After a few days of coolness, the sun blazed with heat again, and the air was thick with moisture and infection. The calendar said October, but it felt like July. Rumors washed over the city. The fever had ended. The fever started again. A shipload of sick people was coming up river. A cure had been found. No cure was available. An earthquake in the countryside left people saying the end of the world was at hand. The wells had been poisoned. The British were coming. I would have despaired of the hopelessness and confusion. Eliza dismissed the wild tales with a shake of her head.
They may be true, she said, but we have work to do. Come now, Maddie.
One boarding house facing the Delaware River had a sick sailor in nearly every room. We went from patient to patient, checking their condition and feeding weak broth to those who had the strength to swallow. The sailors babbled in their own languages, afraid to die on the wrong side of the ocean in a world far away from people who knew their names. The vinegar-soaked cloth tied around my nose could not shield me from the stench of the dying men who baked in the old house. On our way out, Eliza accepted a basket of dry bread from the woman who ran the boarding house.
"That's nearly the last of the flour," the woman said. "It'll be sawdust after this, just like the war."
"Sawdust?" I asked. "You can make bread?"
"It will have some flour in it," Eliza said as she thanked the woman. "But the sawdust will stretch the wheat, make it go farther. When your stomach hurts enough, the tongue won't mind the taste."
At Barrett's Apothecary, Eliza purchased jalap and bohea tea. I walked around the shop while Eliza argued with the owner about his prices. Grandfather used to bring me to Barrett's to buy soft-shell almonds and figs from the big barrel. This was the kind of shop I had always dreamed of. Back then, the shelves had been crowded with colored glass jars, wooden boxes, casks, and bags, all labeled with the spidery handwriting of Mr. Barrett. Now, they were covered with dust and the shells of dead insects. Eliza finished her purchases, grabbed my hand, and slammed the door behind us.
"He's a scurrilous dog, that man," she muttered.
"Why do you say that? He seemed friendly enough, and he has the medicine you need."
"The price of jalap and tea has climbed to the clouds since the fever struck. If he really cared, he would charge a decent price instead of robbing the sick. Pharmacists and coffin makers are the only people who profit from this plague."
"Don't forget the thieves," I added. Eliza made a noise in her throat and squinted at the house numbers.
"We are going to number 30, the Sharp family. They could have left for the country long ago, but he's a merchant and didn't want to leave the business. Then a serving girl came down with the fever, and Sharp's wife wouldn't abandon the girl, bless her."
"What happened?"
"The serving girl recovered, but Mr. Sharp died. His mind went before the end, and he raged throughout the house like a mad bull, destroying all he touched. Mrs. Sharp suffered a mild case, but is back on her feet again. She fears for her son and daughter. They are both ill in bed. Here it is."
Eliza headed straight for the stairs that led to the bedchambers overhead, but I stopped in the front hall to stare. The furniture lay in heaps of splintered wood and feathers. A looking-glass had been dashed to thousands of pieces, and the gilt frame torn apart. The curtains were torn from the windows, and a door was nearly ripped off its hinges. Mr. Sharp did not go gently to his grave.
"Stop dawdling, Maddie," Eliza called from overhead. "Stoke the fire and set a pot of water to boil. Then come up here and fetch these dirty sheets."
We spent the day caring for the Sharp children and reviving Mrs. Sharp, who fainted when the doctor bled both children. After the sun had fallen beneath the rooftops, we arrived at the Colburn house in time to see the body of the last Colburn taken out to the death cart. Eliza dragged me inside, saying we still had an obligation to wash down the sick room. We closed the door behind us when the western sky was shot through with the last pewter and gold rays of the day.
"You go on home, Maddie. You need a good meal and a rest," Eliza said. "I only have one more house on this list.
Tell Joseph that I'll be along just as soon as I'm finished.
No, I said firmly. I'm not going anywhere. The work will go faster if you